Now, we already went through the first dream, Yosef's first dream, in Posuk Zion, verse number 7. Now we come to the reaction of the brothers in verse number 8. Vayemru lo echav. So his brothers tell him, Hamoloch timloch aleinu. Will you reign over us? Will you be a king over us? Im mashol timshol banu. Will you rule over us? Now, what is the difference between being a melech as opposed to being a mosheil? The commentaries say that melech is someone who rules with the agreement of the ruled, and a mosheil is somebody who rules against the will of the people. So what they were telling him here is the following. You think you are going to be a melech, that we are going to agree. It's not true. Moshol timshol banu. If anything will bring the dream to reality, to realization, it will only be if you can do it by force. If you don't have the force, we'll never agree. That's what they were telling him. Vayosifu otsno also, and they hated him even more. Al chalomotav, number one, for having such dreams. Second of all, v'al dvarav, because he said over the dreams. Now, why should a person be blamed for having that kind of a dream? So the commentaries say that it's something that's well known today. The Talmud mentions it, that a person usually dreams what he thinks about during the day. So therefore, if he has such dreams of tremendous power, it must be that that's all he thinks about. So this is why they hated him for his dreams. And second of all, they hated him for saying over the dreams. And in verse number 9, Vayachalom od chalom acher. He again dreamt another dream. Vayisaper otol le'echav. And he told it over to his brothers. Vayomer, hinei chalamti chalom od. I had another dream. Vinei ha-shemesh ve-hayareach. The sun and the moon. Ve'achad asar kochavim. Now you can't miss the meaning of 11 stars, right? He has 11 brothers. Mishtachavim li, bow down to me. Vaisaper elaviv elechav. He also told it over to the father in front of the brothers. Vaigarbo aviv, and his father started screaming at him, criticized him. Vayomelo mahachalom haze asher chalamta. What kind of a dream is it? Havo navo ani. Ve'imcha ve'achecha, will I come with your mother, with your brothers, lishtachavot lecha arza? Question mark. Rhetorical question. What did he mean to say? It's a bunch of nonsense. That's what he said.
Was Binyamin already born?
Binyamin was already born and Rachel was already dead. So that's the problem here. You see, it's a rhetorical question. Will we come to bow down to you? What kind of nonsense is it? Don't you realize it's a bunch of nonsense?
Isn't this supposed to be a little
bit
like a dream?
Oh, wait. So, what is Yaakov trying to tell Yosef? Why are you saying over such a silly dream? You know it's a silly dream. What is the proof that it's a silly dream? It's a dream that can't possibly be fulfilled. Why? There is one thing missing. What? The moon. His mother was dead by now. Right, in last week's portion of the week, we already studied that as soon as they crossed the borders of Israel, Rachel was dead already. So therefore, this is what Jacob means. Don't you realize it's a bunch of nonsense? Okay? So this seems to be Jacob's position, right? That the dream is a bunch of nonsense. Right? That's what it seems to be. So let's go on to the next verse. Vaykana'u bo echav. And his brothers... Vaikan'u means they were jealous of him. Now, that's a very strange word here, because before, which verb did we use when we were describing the brothers' feelings about Yosef? What words? Lisno, right? It says they hated him. In verse number 4, they hated him. Because of the jealousy, they hated him. So it's very strange. What should have been the reaction after, in verse number 4, after Yosef receives a present that they didn't receive? Jealousy. What does it say? Hatred. Right? Vayisne'u also. Here, the reaction should have been what? When he says, well, you know, the sun and the moon will come and bow down to me. What should have been the reaction? Hatred. What does the Torah say? Jealousy. It's very strange. The exact opposite. But let's go on. Any comments on this? So let's go on to the next verse. Vaikanu bo achiv ve'aviv. However, the father shamar et hadavar. What does it mean shamar? To guard, to keep. To put it aside in his mind and saying, this thing is going to happen. I have an intuition that what Joseph says is exactly what's going to happen. Now, this seems a little bit contradictory, because what does it say in verse number 10? That the father himself proved to Joseph how ridiculous the dream is. Why? Because as soon as one part doesn't work, then the whole thing doesn't work. Okay? And here it says that in spite of the fact that he himself said that it won't work, he himself believed in the dream. So how could he have believed in the dream? After all, if one part of it is nonsense, then the whole thing is nonsense. What is the proof that the whole thing is not nonsense? So is the question clear, right? The apparent contradiction between verse number 10 and number 11. In number 10, Jacob seems to feel that the dream is nonsense. And in number 11, it says clearly that Yaakov believed in the dream. So which one is it? So Rashi quotes the oral tradition. Number one, Rashi says, the dream does realize it. It does come into realization. It does happen. How? So who is the mother? Not his real mother, but his stepmother. Who is his stepmother? The one who raised him as a child. And according to our tradition, it was Bilhah. Bilhah was the servant of Rachel, that as soon as Rachel dies, she takes over her position. So as far as the dream, moon is concerned, the symbolism of the moon is concerned, we have no problem, right? But that's what we know in retrospect. Jacob doesn't know that. So Rashi says here, he doesn't know that because it says, Imcha, the moon must be your mother, and he says, your mother is dead. It's impossible. Listen to the words of Rashi. Vehu lo haya yodeya. Yaakov, for some reason, doesn't know. He doesn't realize shadvarim magi'in lebilha, that the real meaning in retrospect becomes Bilhah, right? Who happens to come to Egypt, and she does bow down in front of Joseph. So the dream does come true. And how is Bilhah his mother? She got lotoki imo, because it was she raised him as a child. Okay? So he doesn't know that. So that makes the question even stronger. If he doesn't realize that the moon means Bilhah, then for sure Yaakov should have decided that it's a bunch of nonsense. Right? And then again, it makes verse number 11 even more difficult. Let's go on. It's a little bit such, a little bit complicated what we are going to be studying here. There are a few steps, so please concentrate here. Yeah? We don't know. I mean, that's what the rabbis say. He doesn't know that. Who loyada? That's why I say, I want to stress Rashi's term. Who loyada? He doesn't know. Okay?
Why don't you say that Yaakov just said this?
Fine, very good. So what you are saying is Yaakov knows very well that he's talking about Bilhah. But he's trying to convince the brothers that it's a bunch of nonsense. And so therefore he lies to the brothers saying that, listen, it must be Rachel and Rachel is dead. That's how I would have understood it, right? But Rashi doesn't understand it this way, right? Rashi, quoting the rabbis, understands that literally Yaakov would not lie. Yaakov is saying the truth. Yaakov does not know that it's referring to Bilhah, right? This is what Rashi says. Vehu lo yada, lo haya yodeya. He doesn't know. And I understand the rabbi's position, why they don't understand the whole situation the way I did. Because they figured Yaakov wouldn't put on such a show. What for? If he really believed in it, so why would he lie to the brothers? That's probably the reason. I'm just guessing. I don't know. But what is the fact? The fact is that Rashi, quoting the rabbi, says that Yaakov does not know at this time that the dream means Bilhah instead of Rachel. Let's go on. Says Rashi. I'm continuing reading Rashi.
The first pshat,
nothing. There's no first and second pshat. This is the pshat. This is the pshat. There's no other pshat. Rashi just adds one piece of information here, which on the surface doesn't make sense. Verabotenu lamdu mikan, and our rabbis derive from this story the following fact. She'ein chalom belo dvarim betelim. Every single dream, right, must have at least part of it as being absolute nonsense, part of it. Sometimes the whole thing is nonsense. But even a meaningful dream is partially meaningless. Okay. What is the proof? What is the proof from here?
The fact that
it's talking about the moon. But that's no problem at all. Because the moon could be referring to Bilhah. So if so, the dream was 100% correct. So doesn't the fact that the moon is Bilhah, right, contradict the rabbinical statement that all dreams must have part of it as being meaningless? The whole thing is contradictory, yeah.
But the moon isn't necessarily the spouse of
it. I mean, we are talking symbolically, metaphorically. Why not? I mean, you know, we have what gives us light? The sun and the moon. So, fine. So the sun is Yaakov and the moon is the wife of Yaakov. Why not? I mean, it makes sense. But here's the problem. The basis for the rabbinical assumption that all dreams must have a certain part which is nonsense is based on this, when Rashi himself had told us before how from here you can prove that there must be something which is meaningless because the moon may be Bilhah. Here, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Right, on the surface. Leah for sure is not the moon in Yosef's dream. That's the assumption. Because Leah and Yosef, right, were two worlds, right? If it's anybody, it's Bilhah, right? For some reason, Leah, it didn't occur to anybody. Oh, definitely, definitely. Bilhah became, as a matter of fact, the new Rochel, exactly. She became the new Rochel, yeah. Exactly. No, that's the problem. No, you can't say it's an exception because the rabbis learned the rule from here. Exactly. Listen to the words. Verabotenu, our rabbis, right? Lomdu mikan. They derive from this case. Yes, you understand? If, exactly. If it would be that the rabbis know it from another source. So as you say, this could be an exception. But the rabbis only know it basing themselves on this. So this doesn't make any sense. The answer to all the problems is the following. We are talking about three different things. There are some things which are called dreams, right? Just plain human dreams. And there are two types of dreams: meaningful dreams and meaningless dreams. 99.99% of dreams are completely meaningless. They just reflect what you have been thinking during the day. Therefore, don't give any importance to dreams. Once in a while, right? And some people, even more often than once in a while, have meaningful dreams. Okay? The statement of the rabbis, a dream must have partially something meaningless, is part of the description of what a dream is like. It must have something meaningless, even if it's a meaningful dream. Is this clear? But there are some dreams which are not really dreams, they are prophecies. Okay? There are many prophecies that come in the form of dreams given to prophets. Now, those dreams are not 99.9% reliable, because if they are only 99.9% good, then they are not prophecies. Because the definition of a prophecy is something which is 100% reliable. Okay? So we have three types of dreams: meaningless dreams, meaningful dreams that according to our tradition must have partially something meaningless, and prophecies in the form of dreams. Now, when we look back at Yosef's dream, right, what do we see in it? In retrospect, not the way they saw it at the time. We, in retrospect, how do we understand Yosef's dream more? How do we understand the fact that Yosef was driven to say over the dream? What was he? Was he stupid? Was he insensitive? Didn't he realize that he's causing hatred among the brothers? Of course he realizes it. But as every good prophet knows, this is the job of a prophet. He has a message, he'll share the message. This is what is the responsibility of the prophet. And Yosef sees himself as a prophet. Now, in retrospect, if we say that what Yosef has here is a real prophecy, then it must be that every detail is correct. So in retrospect, what must be the meaning of the moon? Bila, there is no question about it, in retrospect, correct? However, at the time, it was understood not as a prophecy. It didn't occur to anybody that Yosef is a prophet giving over a prophecy. Most that it can be is what? A meaningful dream, exactly. A meaningful dream, okay? Now, if it's a meaningful dream, now let's understand. There is a contradiction here. Yaakov says to the brothers, don't worry about the dream, because it has one part which is not meaningful, right? So, the same way that this is meaningless, maybe something else is meaningless. And then in the next verse it says, but Yaakov deep inside believed that it was what? A meaningful dream. And the question is on Yaakov himself. How could he believe that it was a meaningful dream, since he himself knows that one part of it for sure is meaningless? So the question is on Yaakov himself. What is the answer to that question? Because Yaakov knows something that we don't know. What does he know? That in every meaningful dream, there must be something which is meaningless. Therefore, the fact that the moon is there, right, reinforces the fact that it is a meaningful dream. Just it's a meaningful dream with one meaningless fact, the moon. Okay? But of course, he didn't tell over this fact to the brothers. He doesn't have to. Why should he increase their hatred? So therefore, everything is answered. We, in retrospect, who know it's a prophecy, so there we have to say that every detail is meaningful. So what are we going to do with the moon? The moon is Bila. Why didn't Yaakov himself know it? To Yaakov, it wasn't a prophecy. He didn't understand it as a prophecy. Most you can say about Yaakov is the fact that that he believed that it was what? A meaningful dream. But does he have to convince the brothers that it's a meaningful dream? Not at all. He's happy that the brothers should think that it's a meaningless dream. So he points out, look, the moon is definitely meaningless. Let them figure out from that that everything else is also meaningless. But what about Yaakov himself? He believed in the meaningfulness of the dream. What are we going to do with the one fact which is meaningless? Must be that Yaakov knows the rule that every meaningful dream must have one part which is meaningless. So everything is answered, okay? Okay, yeah. You see, why should he, if he would have seen it as a prophecy, so that's the job of everybody to make sure that the prophecy is known and believed. If it's only a dream, so let him not believe the dream. If it happens, let it happen. What? Why do they have to know right away? Right, exactly. That's the idea behind it.
I think on this passage is written in the poems. They say here, everybody kind of goes, Rachel Mesa, from Ashir, the end of Ashir.
Right.
Right.
Well, according to the code, there's a very interesting code here that if you take the letter bet backwards with a separation of 156 letters, if you go backwards, you'll find bet, lamed, hey, with a separation of 156 letters. Bet, you take, for instance, from Havon Novo, right? You take the bet, go backwards 156 letters, you'll find a lamed. Go backwards another 156 letters, a hey. And go backwards another 156 letters, you'll find another hey, which spells Bila.
156 is Joseph?
Oh. 156 is the gematria, is the numerical value of two things. Yosef and Kina, which means jealousy.
Why backwards?
I don't know, but the point is that they put it through the computer and it came out that nowhere in the Torah do you find Bila spelled in such a way. This is the only place. I have a theory why it's backwards. Because it's only found out in retrospect. Remember we said you can only find out backwards. You know, when you look from the back. So that's a possibility. So this is one of the things that Rabbi Weissmandel, Rabbi Weissmandel came up with this idea of the codes. He came out with this incredible idea, right? But now with the computers, it has been checked that it really doesn't appear anywhere else. Oh yeah, of course. I mean, he just sat down and he worked out. What? From one of the bet, if I'm not mistaken, I can't tell you for sure, but I think it's the bet of Havo Novo, the first bet of Havo. You go back 156, you find Lamed. Hey, hey. It's verse number 10.
But the Rochel Meister, that's directly in there.
That's interesting. Yeah. Again, they put it through the computer. And they saw that combination of letters doesn't appear anywhere else in the whole Torah. Reish, Chof, Lamed. Right?
Which fits in the Havo?
Right? You see in the verse number 10, Yud. If you take a look at the word Asher, do you see the word Asher in the middle of the verse? Asher? Right? Asher Cholomto. Okay? Now, you know that the commentary, there is a Midrash which says that the original version of the Torah was a compilation of letters without separation. You know that. Which means that there are a lot of things that we can understand by putting the letters in, with different combinations. Right? Now it was separated later on. So therefore, if you separate in the word asher, take away the aleph and the shin. So what have you got left? The resh. Okay? Then take the next word. And what is the next word? Cholomto. So separate the lamed from the mem, and join the resh with the chet and the lamed. So what word do you have?
Rochel.
True? Resh, chet, lamed. And then take the hey of the word habo. Right? Havo. And connect it with the mem and the taf before. And what word will you have? Meta. So put it together and what does it say? Rachel, meta. So even though in the text it doesn't appear, it's only an oral tradition, that what Yaakov meant to say is, hey, Rachel Meita, it's already hinted by the combination of letters. That's
Yeah,
it's interesting what Rabbi Weissmandel says. Well, you know, he did it without a computer. He backed it up because there was no way for him to figure out that there is nowhere else in the whole Torah, you understand? What?
He had many of them.
Oh, he had a lot. But what you couldn't figure out before the computers came into existence is perhaps it appears somewhere else with the same, so then it would lose its meaning. It would lose its impact. So what the computer does is that it shows that, no, this is the only place where it appears with 156 letter separation. So that adds to the impact of Rabbi Weissmandel's idea.
Why do you separate the Aleph from the Shin,
sorry? No, you see, not the Aleph from the Shin, but the Shin from the Reish. Separate the Shin from the Reish. Right? Drop the Aleph and Shin, exactly.
What
do you gain? You gain that if you take the Reish of Asher, and you connect it with the Chet and the Lamet of the word Cholomto, what have you got? Reish, Chet, Lamet. Rochel.
Are you just doing it by speculation?
Well, it's pure speculation, of course, but the interesting part is that the tradition says that this is an acceptable speculation because the original Torah had no separations. So therefore, there are many meaningful messages in the Torah which can be figured out by reconstructing the words. So this is one of the things that we see here. We are reconstructing the words Rachel Meita, and we see that it's a hint to the fact, right, to what Yaakov's message was. Okay, we'll come back to the kin'ah, to the jealousy, and Yosef and the brothers, but let's go on to verse number 12. Vayelchu echav lira'ot etzon avihem bishchem. And the brothers went to take care of the flock of the father in the city of Shechem. Interesting, they went back to the city of Shechem, right? That's the Shechem, that's a place where they had so much trouble. They went back to that place. Vayomer Israel el Yosef. So Israel, Jacob.
They weren't afraid,
I guess not. They weren't afraid. Yaakov was afraid. Hey, they're going to Shechem, I better send somebody to keep an eye over them. Okay, so they themselves weren't there, but the neighbors, remember Yaakov says, what will the neighbors say? Which means that there were neighbors there. and there was reason to be afraid. And all of a sudden, they are not afraid anymore. Right? It's strange. So they come to Shechem. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, Halo achecha ro'im b'Shechem. Your brothers are taking care of the flocks in Shechem. Lechovesh lachacholeim. So go see them. Vayomer lo hineini. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. It's an unusual thing that Yosef says, I'm ready to go. Because he knows that they don't like him. Right? So whatever it is, fine. He doesn't know the extent of their hatred and what they are planning to do. But it's still, it's courageous of him to say, yeah, fine, I'm ready to go to Shechem. And again, of course, it requires an explanation. Why would Yosef, why would Yaakov send Yosef there? Vayomer lo, and so he tells him in verse number 14, Lech na re'eyet shlom achecha ve shlom hatzon. I just want you to check if your brothers are okay. After all, it's Shechem, right? This is the implication, it's Shechem. So find out if your brothers are okay ve shlom hatzon. Are they still taking care of the flock? Perhaps not. Perhaps everything is lost. But I want to get a report. Vahashiveni davar. You don't have to stay there. You come right back. Vahashiveni davar. You come right back. Vayishlacheyu. So he sent them. From where? From where they live. Where do they live? Well, the city of Hebron. No, it doesn't say that in the Torah. What does it say in the Torah? From the valley of Hebron. We never knew that Hebron is a valley. Exactly. We never knew that Hebron is a valley. Right. Vayishlacheyu me'emek Hebron. He sent him from the valley of Hebron, Vayavo Shechem, and he came to Shechem. Says Rashi, quoting the oral tradition. Me'emek Hebron, says Rashi. Ve'alo Hebron Bahar. Hebron is a high place, not a valley. Sheneemar, Vayalu Banegev. They went up in the south and they came to Hebron once they were going up. Right? If it's a valley, they would be going down. Ela. Well, the Torah means it's something else. It's a code here. This is a code for something else. Emek. The word, what does Emek mean? Emek means something very deep, something that you can't see on the surface, because the word for depth in Hebrew is what? Amok. Amok. Emek. The depth of what? Me'etzo amuko shel oto tzadik hakavur beHebron. Who is the tzadik buried in Hebron? The tzadik. Well, that's even though Yitzchok is still alive, by the way. Yitzchok is still alive. It can't be Yitzchok. It must be Avram. So it's the Eitzo Amuko that Avram gave. What was the Eitzo? The advice. Eitzo is advice, right? The advice that Avram gave. That what? Lekayim Hashenemar LeAvraham Bein Avtari. When God was making the pact with Abraham, he told him, Ki ger iye zaracha. Your children will be slaves in a land not theirs. So if you just read the Rashi, right, on the surface, and you would say, what is Rashi telling us here? You would say, well, he's telling us that Yaakov wanted what? That the Jews should end up in Egypt. That's why he's sending Yosef to Shechem. And that's exactly what happens. He comes to Shechem, or he comes to the place next to Shechem. This is where he's sold to Egypt. And once he's sold to Egypt, that causes the rest of the brothers to come down to Egypt, and that's the beginning of the Egyptian exile. So Yaakov intentionally meant that they should go down to Egypt. Well, that's impossible. That's impossible, true? And is that what we're going to say? Does Rashi mean literally that Yaakov sent Yosef to Shechem in order that the brother should sell him and he should end up in Egypt? That's what it seems that he's saying. Of course, that's impossible. What? So you are saying that perhaps it's true. Perhaps it's true that Yaakov knows what he's doing exactly, and then when the brothers come and show him the bloody shirt, and he cries, it's only putting on an act, right? That's what must be, because if he knows everything, then he knows that too. For 22 years he cries, right? And then when they tell him Yosef is alive and he's absolutely shocked, it's also an act. Can't accept it. Can't accept that the whole thing was a big act of Yaakov, and he knows exactly what's happening. Nah, it just doesn't. Well, yeah, and it's just not reasonable. It's not reasonable. So if it's not reasonable, what else could it possibly mean? That he's sending Yosef to Shechem for a purpose connected with the prophecy that God sent him to Shechem in order to avoid going to Egypt. He sent him to Shechem in order that in Shechem, there is something in Shechem that would give the brothers a push to accept Yosef's supremacy, and they would bow down to Yosef, and that would have avoided the Mitzrayim exile and fulfill the original message of Hashem to Avraham Avinu. This is the meaning of this statement. It's not the way it sounds on the surface that Yaakov knows that Yosef is going to end up in Egypt. That's nonsense. Yaakov knows that there is something that has to be fulfilled. He's convinced now that the exile is coming, right? It's not post-exile, it's pre-exile, the experience that they are having now. He believes it now. Shamar is Adavar. Yaakov is convinced that Yosef is right. So what is the solution now? To speed the process that Yosef is prophesying about. How? By sending Yosef to Shechem, and Shechem should be the place where the rectification happens. What? The unity of all the brothers. Yeah.
There's only one problem with this scenario.
Yeah.
First of all, we have Yosef a few pasuks before being a spy on the brothers and reporting to Yaakov that the brothers aren't doing right. Then we have Yaakov making a special coat, which brings more envy for the brothers. Now we have him going to the ghetto being a spy again. So we're talking about Yaakov. We're talking about a gadol from prophecy, from knowing, who had his own great dreams himself. He wouldn't know that the reaction from all this. He's bringing up his scenery, the anger.
Who? Yaakov.
Yaakov between the brothers and Yosef.
Yes.
So he's supposed
all right.
to have peace from this
place. Of course. The whole point is, now we'll have to go through the whole concept of jealousy here. You see, you know, there is a very, very interesting prayer. It's not said in Israel, because in Israel, the Birchat Kohanim is said every day. But outside of Israel, where the Birchat Kohanim, the blessings of the priest, is said only during the holidays, they have a special prayer to be said during the Birchat Kohanim. Is there a sitter by any chance here on the... Oh, here, thanks a lot. So let me read to you a certain part of that prayer which we say during Birchat Kohanim. Very strange, strange prayer.
Did they say in
Chutz La'aretz? Yeah, in Chutz La'aretz. In Israel they don't say it. Is this an everyday? Oh, this is... it's an everyday. A holiday. If there is one. If not, I'll tell you over more or less. There is a full sitter? Oh, good. What? Before the Reborn Shalom. Right, the Reborn Shalom. I mean the Reborn Shalom. Exactly.
I don't understand. It talks about dreams.
What?
Dreams.
Exactly. It does talk about dreams. The whole Birchat Kohanim is used outside of Israel to rectify dreams, to take care of dreams. Right? It's not a coincidence at all. Here it is. So it says like this. We're not going to go into the details of the whole prayer, but I'm just quoting one part of the prayer. It's not on Shabbos. Is there? No, I'm sorry. Is there another sitter, because this doesn't have the full prayer?
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, sure.
While
we're waiting for a sitter.
He says, go see if there's a feeding their father's flock.
Right.
And he says, your brethren are not. They ask the question in the translation. Aren't your brothers feeding the flock? It could also be looked at without a question mark, because there's no question mark in the Hebrew.
Yeah.
Your brothers are not feeding the flock.
Where? In verse number 14?
No, 13. Your brothers are not feeding the flock.
No, halo. Halo means clearly... it's a fact that halo, I would say... Or isn't it a fact that... Right? Which means it's a fact. Hello, it's a rhetorical. The hello is always rhetorical. Isn't it a fact? Which means it's certainly a fact. Okay.
That
they are feeding.
That they are feeding.
Right. Right.
So if they're feeding the flock,
right,
then why does he?
They are supposed to. Ro'im. They went there to take care of the things.
Why does Jacob say, go see if they're feeding the flocks?
Right. Shalom Achecha.
They're doing that.
Right.
He already said they're doing it.
No. But are they okay? Maybe they have been attacked by those people in Shechem, and maybe something happened to them. Maybe something happened to the flock. I'd like to know, and maybe I can help from here. That's what the simple interpretation is. Of course, the Shalom Achecha, according to the second meaning, means Shalom Achecha means the Shleimut, the Shalom, which is the opposite of what happens in Shechem. In Shechem, there is no Shalom. The Shalom Hatzon, you know that Tzon is also a code word? The Jewish people. Remember, Rachel Ba'a Im Hatzon. Now, the Tzon represents the future of the Jewish people, the Tzon. So, let me just read to you from this prayer. And you shall give us chen ul chesed, and keshem shenatata et Yosef tzadikecha, lechen ul chesed arachamim beinecha uveinei kol reino. Please God, help us that we should find favor in everybody's eyes. The same way shenatata et Yosef tzadikecha, the way you gave to Yosef, right? If he found favor in everybody's eyes. When his father gave him that special shirt.
Did he found favor,
I'm reading the. I mean, it's unbelievable. Do you realize how unbelievable this prayer is? Please help us like you helped Yosef, that when the father gave him the shirt, he found favor in everybody's eyes. That's what in his favor. But if anything caused non-favor, was giving him the Ktones Pasim. That's unbelievable. What is this? What does the statement mean? Ktones Pasim lechenu lechesel rachem beinecho veine kol ra'av. You see, when he was wearing the Ktones Pasim, he found favor in everybody's eyes. Everybody looked at him naturally. He just found favor in everybody's eyes. It's a very, very difficult prayer. I mean, there must be something to it. What's going on? So, come back tomorrow. I'm sorry. I have to. It's getting late. Which page you mean? Birchat Kohanim. Birchat Kohanim, you see. You see, it's only outside of Israel. It's only outside of Israel. What? Only on festivals and only outside of Israel. And here it is in this sitter is page number 700. Okay, just take a look at it. Maybe think about it. Come up with an answer.